So I have a few thank yous and a few information notes this morning. I do have to duck out at 9:45 to catch a flight. I have cards up here. I also have a sign-up sheet up here. At the end of my presentation, there are a lot of resources. So if you would like for me to email you the slides, I'm happy to do that. In fact, maybe I will just send this around. And my request there is to please print legibly. Every time I do this, I end up getting a few return emails because I can't really read the email address. So apologies there. Okay, I'm going to go through a number of things to give you the background for what we're doing in California. So we have a really, really nifty approach to being able to address school disciplinary policies and health inequities, the push-out policies, the suspension and expulsion of youth. So first of all, I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, the overview. The issue here is that what we have done is we've passed a really great piece of legislation that enables schools to take money and apply it to populations and subpopulations that really need those resources. So, and I'm not going to read the slides. I'm going to let you read those because you can do that faster. So we have inequities. As many as 40% of our suspensions and expulsions relate to willful defiance, which can be as simple as refusing to take off a hat. It could also have been the case in South Carolina from a week or week and a half ago where the young woman didn't put away her cell phone. Those in the past have been suspendable actions. So there are options to zero tolerance policies, and then the real rub comes with the implementation. How do we implement this? We've got the legislature to agree to a plan that enables us to move money around, which, you know, in the past we've always said, well, where's the money going to come from? Well, we now have an answer to that if we can get it implemented. So I'm going to go through some quick inequities. I'm going to go through a little bit of information so that you have a frame for what's going on in California. You guys know this. The students who are hungry, who have poor oral health, who are facing trauma, don't do as well in school as those who are not facing these issues. There's a study from a Chicago neighborhood that specifically shows that students exposed to violence do less well on reading and vocabulary assessments, and peer victimization is a huge issue. And we as educators and public health folks need to understand these issues. We need to understand the peer-to-peer relationships, home environments, cumulative trauma issues, productive work environments, etc. Okay, this looks at the 2013-14 school year, and you can see what the numbers are. This number has 33% for willful defiance. We had a lot of school districts that were above 40. And then you also see the critical issue for our African American and Latino students. So this is a serious crisis. There are a number of things at play here. There's implicit bias, there's unconscious bias, and how we deal with all of these issues determines what kind of school system we have and what kind of society we have. There we go. Okay. This looks at disparity odds. So the number for a white youth would be 1. And you see that the juvenile custody rates for Latinos are 2.1 times that, African Americans 5.7, and then you see the firearm related death and the homicide related death. This is pretty well documented, but still it's always surprising when you actually see it laid out this way. And at some point I'm going to learn how to make the clicker work. There we go. Okay. We have a huge dropout crisis in California. 25 to 30% of all California teenagers are high school dropouts. And the second bullet here is really critical. This is the cost. It is billion, $46.4 billion over the lifetime of each cohort. So that is every year, those who drop out. This is what it costs. And these, obviously, this is not only the attendance cost to the schools. These are welfare, unemployment, the cost of having lower paying jobs than they would have had otherwise. Are there alternatives? Yes, there are. How many of you know what restorative justice is? Okay. How many of you feel you could implement restorative justice? Okay. Restorative justice is a program, and it's probably the best known of these evidence-based alternatives that I'm going to walk through. It really focuses on respect, responsibility, repairing a situation, and reintegration. So it very much works to bring the youth and the community, the school together, and to work through these issues. There are restorative justice circles, and they can be very, very effective. As we go through these different options, I'm also going to point out that this is a very labor-intensive intervention. To get 10, 15, sometimes 30 people together to work through the appropriate alternatives and get to a common understanding can be very expensive. So I have a lot of schools saying to me, oh, we want to do restorative justice, and they have no idea what they're getting into. So one of the pieces that I want to point out is it's really important to look at the alternatives and to figure out what works for your school, what works for your group. How many of you have heard of positive behavioral intervention supports, PBIS? Great, great. How many of you feel you could implement it? Okay, this is not uncommon. I mean, this is exactly why I'm asking these questions, because people jump and they say, oh, this sounds great. I like these first two introductory sentences. We're going to go with that, without quite realizing what is involved in this. So this is a systems change approach that really works to change the overall culture, as does restorative justice. So, and it's very much, as the name implies, it very much relates to establishing positive expectation, providing praise for doing that, providing support. But that's support not only for the students, it's support for all of the staff and all of the administration. So these are really critical issues. How many of you know about trauma-informed schools? Great. I have a knowledgeable audience today. This is lovely. Again, the same thing. This also needs to be a systems-wide approach where you instill throughout the school and throughout the district the importance of creating safe environments for students so that they can recover from trauma and take their energies and focus and apply them to schoolwork and to the social behavioral aspects that relate to all of that. I'm going to just mention a couple more. The good behavior game is something that is often used in elementary schools, and usually you create teams and they can either compete to do the best, or they can cooperate to do the best. So you can structure it in different ways, but again, very much related to reinforcing good behavior. And then also social emotional learning, which is related to all of the other interventions. And again, creating this social emotional support so that students understand what's going on. Okay, I'm going to go through some quick evidence about how, about the outcomes that we're getting from these alternatives. You will see that Michigan has done some exciting work, and they're showing reductions in suspension of 45% to 63% with increased academic achievement, and they're very happy with their restorative practices program. Some other examples here: West Philadelphia, Denver, Chicago, and Palm Beach, Florida. And these are primarily using PBIS. So you'll see a story that repeats over and over here. As you reduce suspensions, you tend to get better academic outcomes, and you also tend to get much happier students. Sometimes the students say to us, well, we're not as worried anymore. We trust our teachers. We trust our administrators. They're not bringing police into the school site. So we feel like we're real people here. Those are the comments that I get from students. Oh, this is lovely. Huh. Well, that is supposed to be about 50 times larger than it is. Sorry about that. On my slide, it looks much better. Okay. So this is PBIS, and this is in California. And we've done it in a large elementary school, a middle school, and a high school. One is in Marin County in the Bay Area. One is in, one is close to San Jose, and one is a large high school in LA. And the basic issue is the same. The red bar there is reductions in suspensions, and the increases are in academic performance. And what I like about this study is its academic performance for English language learners, for African American students, for Latino students, for developmentally delayed students. So it's really very nice that they were able to break it down by subpopulation. So again, very dramatic changes. Okay, so this is the legislation. It's called AB 420. And of course, we're a little slow, even though it's been chaptered into law, we're still referring to it as by the legislative number. So what this does is it's a 3-year policy experiment. And what it does is it says you can't suspend for willful defiance unless you go through a very rigorous justification. So this is good news, because we were just sweeping students out of the system. So there are technical plans that are required. There are priorities, and some of the foci are parental involvement, pupil achievement, pupil engagement, and school climate. So I'm going to skip over this next slide, because this is a bunch of jargon that talks about the hoops you have to jump through. Those hoops are important, because you'll see this is one of the areas. It's great, we've got the legislation, but now how do we put this into play and how do we help school districts really understand how to implement this? So this is one of our colleagues, Larry Green. You may know him. He was at the CDC forever. He's now at UCSF. And this is really, really a very cogent statement about what we have to do and the many, many iterative steps there are for this. So implementing this legislation at the local level is really all about strategic planning, and it is about how to understand these complexities. So it's all about, it's all about tailoring programs. And many of you have done this in many different ways. This is a pretty big experiment that California is undertaking. So we're really trying to understand how we translate all of these issues for all stakeholders. And so as we go through this, think not only about doing the work, but making certain that all of your stakeholders, from the community, parents, administrators, et cetera, are in the loop on all of these issues. These are several of the primary data sets that we use in California to think about attendance, to think about socio-demographic issues, to understand how we're doing things. There are very few school districts who understand how to do this. I wish there were about 50 of me to sit with every school district and help them start to work through this. For example, many school districts will say, oh, we need to increase our overall high school graduation rate. That's usually not the issue. Usually what they need to do is to increase their African American or their Latino graduation rates. So you have to know how to go into the data, and you have to be able to say, oh, this school has this issue. But so you have to understand how to write your goals. Of the 25 plans I have read for the local districts, I have found two that almost understand this issue. So this is huge. It's like at the local level, we're not understanding the power that we have with the legislation, which of course is going to affect how money is spent. We also have some lovely issues, such as we have middle class communities especially who are very worried about data and how data is used. So they very often don't want their data used or collected. We have a school in Beverly Hills that happens to have an oil well very close to it. Those kids have a lot of asthma and a number of other issues. Because of the power of the petroleum industry, those data are almost impossible to get. So not unusual, but just important to understand. The other issue here in terms of complexity is that while you're building out this entire group to plan and move forward, we have these organizational structures that both go horizontally and then come into contact with all of the governmental vertical organizations. So this is a really complex undertaking. We have a great Department of Education, but it doesn't mean we don't have a number of stakeholders at that level too. This is a really important slide because a lot of school districts are now not suspending youth of color. But that isn't as positive as I want it to be. What that often means is that students are taken out of their classroom and they're stuck in the classroom at the end of the hallway. In New York, that used to be, I don't know if it still is, called the rubber room. I mean, it's essentially you're sitting in detention with someone who is babysitting you, but you're not in school, you're not learning the way you need to. We also have schools that where students roam the hallways. We also have other campuses where students are just pushed off campus. They're not suspended, but you find them in the community roaming around on their bikes. So not exactly what I was looking for in terms of reducing suspensions. So again, the policy is on the books, and teachers in a number of districts say to us, we don't suspend youth of color, period. But that doesn't mean we're doing restorative justice or PBIS or anything that is constructive to bring the community together around these issues. I'm going to skip to this slide, lessons learned. I can't overemphasize enough that it takes real commitment to understand many, many, many levels of the planning, the data, using the measurements to come back and follow through to see if we're creating change. So we need not only practices, but we need systems, we need data, we need leadership teams and district coaching, because it's really difficult to do any of this stuff on your own. The other thing that I mentioned but is critical, this needs to be system-wide. It doesn't work to choose Mr. or Mrs. who has a great class and implement it over here. It needs to be school-wide if you're really going to change the culture. And the other, just to reiterate, the other critical component is that you have to bring everybody along with you. So it's this constant circle of inclusion and translation. I have a number of resources here at the back of this presentation. There is a sign-up sheet going around for those of you who came in late. If you would like a copy of the slides, I am happy to email them to you. I do apologize. I have to duck out at 9:45 this morning, but I'm happy to take a few questions, as long as I don't derail the other presentations. Do you have questions? Are you facing any of these issues in your districts, and how are your schools dealing with it? And do the educational folks understand that the inequities are a public health issue? I mean, what I find is that the public health people get it. Yes, please. Not to worry.
But what are your alternatives to either in school suspension or maybe, I'm sorry, people already
don't know that. No, I'm sorry, the question is about...
What are your alternatives to in school suspension?
Oh, there are a couple. Let me send you the slides. Okay. It's restorative. The primary ones that we have evidence on are restorative justice, PBIS, social-emotional learning, trauma-informed care, and something that's used in elementary schools called the good behavior game. We have evidence on the outcomes for all of these, and in the slides you will see that school districts around the country are doing very, very well with these. It's not easy, it's a challenge, but we're showing results. Yes.
So you made also a very important point in your question from it all. I think educators in their hearts understand that all insurance has to build health is important. But the reality is that in terms of priorities and time and you're in charge of the plan. So my question is, within the did schools have identified people, because what I often find is there's not enough human resources, and so they put it on, oh, well, you're the counselor for an addition to all of this. Why don't you do the strategic plan and look at the data? And it's very hard to so how do you do that?
I deal with it by trying to, first of all, 8 years ago, we started a Young Boys in Men of Color program. Just on the timing of, I mean, where we did the situation of, you're a great teacher, you're a great classroom, we're going to create a model, and then we're going to hide it everywhere. And we were actually successful doing that, but, you know, it took us 7 or 8 years to get to the point where suddenly I realized, oh, this is fabulous. We've got parents who know what they're getting, and some of us not. So that's what I mean when, you know, if you're really doing this as a consumer, the resources are huge. I mean, most districts that have our, I mean, we have school nurses that are spread over 7 districts. You know, they show up to sign forms. I mean, they should be on the forefront of trauma-informed care. Are they? I mean, they're just, you know, it's not the subject of our operating thing. So most school districts need other resources. As a California, I'm at the university, but I work with the California Teachers Association because of this work. And one of the first things to say is, you're not going to have all the real obstacles. You need a leadership team. We need to figure out where you can get resources. You have to be helping other questions ramp up. The difference would be that the VLA funding is huge, but I fall down on this stuff. So it's really depends on a lot of the effort. And we make the point that, you know, you're not going to have everybody on staff who's there to do this. I mean, I can walk in and find a book and I did this that I can have hours and it's probably on my lot of things. So don't spend your time on that. Talk with us about what your issues are, where you want to go. And then I'll teach you how to learn your way through the day. The same with trauma and care, the same with fire. So don't let them be wrong, although that should work. Other questions? We have in all five of the and we are aware that in our county FDA that we have a program that provides a school environment for going on.
I don't think I should know yet if
it's ran by our one of our district advisors. Is there something we've got parents that come in and help we've got counselors. It's a really great setup, but it's not being utilized by the school as much as before. Is there something or opportunity for this education just adding to that? And I know the step from the school for finding in the school and not the school on the board. It's not moved by the school by the separation.
Do I have anyone here today from Kern County, California?
I do have cards that support those of you who are please feel free to meet little parties. Karen has been stepped up a lot. We're happy to talk with you. We're happy to.
Then we also are happy to
meet you out there. Do I have anyone from Kern? Kern is doing something similar, also you're doing 180 degrees of that are highlighted. So the codes that students will start to get by and on what they don't have in where they're talking about those that work so hard for the
thank you for doing it right.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there more questions?
I think I need to move on so that I don't step on everybody's toes.
Thank you.